It's a joy to worship with my dear brothers and sisters in Shenandoah. God bless you. This morning for a message, I'm still kind of struggling with a title, but let me just give my introduction. I enjoy looking at high school, what do you call them? High school books, the yearbooks, that's what I was worried. And every student is pictured. And you know what I like to look at? The one word that gives them, the one word that's chosen for a caption. Joyce and I went to SMBI back in 1994, I believe it was, and I still enjoy looking at that yearbook and looking at all those friends from decades ago, but that one caption, that's so right, a couple decades later. If you could choose a caption at the end of your life that would mark your life, I want you to think about that a little bit and just arrive at a one word or three words or, you know, just a short little, just think that through just a little bit. What would you choose? I'm going to open it up for a little bit. I'm not going to preach until I have 10 responses. Okay, let's go. Give me 10. And if they're redundant, that's fine.
Go.
Loyal. Love it.
Faithful.
Servant.
Committed.
Care. We're halfway to the sermon. And if you had the word that was, I don't care if it's repeated, honestly. Please.
I know I'd like to have a lot.
One word repeated five times, then I'll be on with the message.
Faithful looking in my mind.
Faithful.
Loving.
Evangelistic.
Three more, and then you get a sermon.
Surrender.
I was hoping one would show up five times, but that's not going to happen. So here we go. So please do a repeat, please.
Encourage.
Say again?
Encourager.
Oh, man. I think that's nine. One more. Yeah, unless I missed one.
Diligent.
Okay. Every one of those is so good for the sake of the message. And I think what really encapsulates my heart is the word faithful. It is required. One thing is required for stewards, the Bible says. One thing. That a man be found faithful. I've been thinking about faith just a little bit. And the title has something to do with faith. But there's a statement that Jesus made that really bothers me. Is that okay to say that? Jesus says, when I come back, will I find faith? Why did he say that? Then I read kind of a collage of scriptures, and I read about shipwrecked faith. I read about dead faith. This is scriptural terms, KJV. I think they're all KJV. Departing from the faith. This is all scriptural. Shipwrecked, dead, departed from. They have denied the faith. They have cast off their first faith. And then there's similar statements like they have fallen from grace. And there's a whole collage of scriptures that I don't really like. But I would like to encourage you this morning on the subject of faith. And before we go further, this is more of an encourager for those that have faith. And my first question to you is a personal question, and it's myself as well. Do you have saving faith? The Bible says we are saved by grace through, what's the vehicle or the avenue? Faith. It is not of ourselves, not of works. Saved by grace through faith. Question is, do you have saving faith? I've already, maybe I even preached it here. is your faith worth dying for? That's another question I would have. Do you have a faith that you are saying, I will die today because I have faith? If I come to the crossroads and it's deny your faith, do I have saving faith? Do you have saving faith this morning? That's the first question I would like to ask you. And so if you don't have saving faith, I'm going to encourage you. The time is now. If God is showing you His holiness, your sinfulness, the great gap between, there's only one bridge, it's the cross, and you put your faith in the cross of Jesus. And you say, I will follow Jesus. And you make the declaration to the whole world. And you carry that out through baptism. That's what baptism really is. A declaration. I have faith. Perfect? Probably not. Failures? Probably. But it's a faith that is going to put you in a race. Oh, by the way, I got to stick a couple race analogies in here. I recently read a statement. I wish I would have documented it, but somebody was a little upset about the human race. And then this person said this: if you want to be inspired with the human race, go to a they may have said marathon, so sorry, you wimpy 10Kers. No. Go to a marathon and go to the finish line and watch them come through and then watch the crowd respond. Sometime I'm going to do that. Now, I might not run the 10K with you, Dale, but I'd love to just watch you guys come through. Somebody said that is just such an awesome atmosphere. And anyway, that was a side note that kind of took me off my course. But faith is basically going to put you into a race. That's the long haul. So what I want to do is inspire faith this morning. I want to look at some marks of the faithful. And by the way, all those loyal, committed, and all those were excellent marks of faithful, encourager, and so on. Excellent marks of the faithful ones. And I want to inspire you. And if you're not, if you didn't launch off into the journey of faith, I just want to encourage you to do that. But this is a little bit more about looking at marks of faithful, just to inspire you to be found faithful. Maybe that's the best encapsulating two words. Found faithful. That's what I want us all to be. So to be found faithful, I want us to just look at some marks of faithful people. And I'm going to drop in at a very familiar passage of Scripture, and it's going to be like a supersonic speed from a high distance. We won't be doing any deep dives into any of these faithful folks, but I want to note a few marks of faithful soldiers. The long-haul faithful. Now, Hebrews 11, by the way, is what I want to look at. Hebrews 11. So if you have your Bible, you can turn there. And I probably I'm not going to read it verse by verse. I'm just going to read a few verses here and there. And we're going to just, my goal is to inspire us to be found faithful. I don't want to be of the category that has shipwrecked faith or denied faith or dead faith or departed from faith or denied faith and so on. I want to be found faithful, and I know you do as well. So this is an encouragement for you, for the faithful, to be continue to be faithful. Hebrews chapter 11. And if you do the context in Hebrews 10, at the very end of it, in verse 38, it says, "The just shall live by faith." Oh, Brent, I was so inspired when you led, and I can't even think of it, encamped. Oh, faith is the victory. Faith. Faith is the victory. It's faith, brothers and sisters. It's faith. And the just shall live by faith, in verse 38. If any man draw back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we're not of them that draw back unto perdition, so that's a possibility. I see that as a possibility. But we're of them that believe, that's faith to the saving of the soul. That's the kind of faith that I want to inspire you. Have you heard the story of Cliff Young? Does anybody ever hear of that man's name? I've told it. I've told the story so many times. Probably one of my favorite stories to tell in illustrating the Christian life. So since you guys ran a race, you might appreciate this. 1983 was the year. Sydney, Australia was the place. The event was an ultra marathon, okay? So there's 5Ks, there's 10Ks, there's half marathons, there's marathons. Marathons is 26 miles. And what's a 10K? It boiled at 6 miles. A 10K is about 6 miles-ish, yeah. So at the end of the 10K yesterday, those of you that ran it, what if somebody would have said, just kidding, this is actually a marathon. You're six times, you need four more laps. A little more than four more laps. Brian, sure! Spencer, definitely. Maybe, I like that, maybe. Ultra marathon is unlimited, as long as it's more than 26 miles. This one in Sydney, Australia was 543 miles. Anybody signing up? 543. That's like running from Maine to down to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, or from here out to the Creation Museum, just to give you a context. 150 world-class runners showed up. I mean, they were professional to the T. All the gear, everything. Also, Cliff Young showed up. He's 61 years old. He didn't have any teeth because he had false teeth and he took them out because when I run, they rattle. He had overalls, waterproof galoshes, kind of like the big old Tingleys. And he made his way over to the registration table and he says, you have a race? Yeah. I would like to sign up. So what do you do? You're at the registration table. Everybody else is professional. Here's a 61-year-old potato farmer without teeth in Tingley boots. Did you ever run before? You know, tacked. No. Have you trained? No. What brings you here? I want to run. The skeptical staff gave him number 64. This is a true story. Boom, the gun went off. Cliff Young starts running. He's left in the dust with his overalls and galoshes. A couple snickers broke off, and you could hear him in the crowd, just like a little bit of mockery. And he had this crazy run. I don't know what it really looks like. I Googled it up. It's called the... it's like a leisure shuffle. It's like kind of like this, you know. It's just real short, choppy. Somebody in the stand said, "So do you stop that crazy guy before he kills himself?" Everybody knew how to run the race. I mean, there was science: run 18 hours, sleep 6, repeat. Not Cliff. He's so steady. And much less rest. In other words, the science of the race was run, rest, run. He just more of a steady shuffle. A little bit of rest, steady shuffle. Huh? 5 days, 15 hours, and 4 minutes after the gun went off, the first person crossing the line was Cliff Young. He won the ultra marathon, not by a few seconds, not by a few minutes, not by an hour or two. 9 hours, 56 minutes later, the next guy comes across the line. He puts his false teeth back in. Remember, no professional gear, and boy, they had all kinds of journalists there trying to figure this out, and he said, I just been doing this for 61 years. I round up 2,000 sheep on 2,000 acres. I don't have the luxury. I don't use the luxury of horses and four-wheelers. Hey, I just got to run sometimes for 3 days. No end. From the heart of a shepherd. I care about my sheep. He knew how to endure. His prize was $10,000. He said, oh, I didn't even realize I got a prize. I don't need it. I make $2,000 a year, he said. That's 5 years. I don't want it. Hey, all you other guys in the professional, this is a true story. All you other guys in the professional gear, here, you take it. He divided it out, didn't keep a penny. I'm a Cliff fan. Not because you won the marathon, because that guy had some things figured out about enduring. And I hope this isn't a bunny trail. I hope this brings together a picture of faithful. I am convinced the faithful are those that know and learn endurance. I have walked with the Lord for now several decades. Trust me, I've seen a lot of sprinters in my life. I've seen a lot of sprint movements in my short run. In fact, I see in my own journey some marks of sprinting. I'll be honest with you. You show me a man, a decade after decade after decade after decade, and he's just running. It might be a Cliff Young shuffle, but he's just running. And he's faithful. That's what I want. And that's what I want to encourage you, my dear brothers and sisters here in Shenandoah, to be found faithful. If you would mark, well, I better keep going to get through a few observations from Hebrews. But Hebrews is a really good book. Some people call it the book of better things. Some people call it the book of warnings. And actually, you can really go through the book of Hebrews and find so many good points. Christ versus angels and so on. There's so many great outlines of the book of Hebrews. I like the one on warnings. You can boil it down. It's warning of neglect, warning of unbelief, warning of immaturity, and the warning of willful sin. That's in chapter 10. But to be faithful is going to be, you're going to have to overcome neglect. You're going to have to overcome unbelief. You're going to have to overcome immaturity. And you're going to have to overcome willful sin. And I believe that's going to be, that launch you into this ultra marathon, spiritual ultra marathon of life with the faithful. So, I believe that Hebrews 11 is far more than just a list of heroes. You know, you have, every sport has its hall of faith, right? I would enjoy going to Cooperstown sometime and seeing all the Major League Baseball Hall of Faith. Hall of Faith, did I say that? A Hall of Famers. Just because I kind of enjoy the game of baseball, okay? And there's other sports that I would... But so there are names there. Big deal. If I am a baseball player, I want to know what got them there, right? I want to know how the mechanics of their swing or their pitch or whatever. I want to know if I'm into that, I want to know a little bit how they got there. So one thing that I am in the race of faith. So it is important to me that I don't read through Hebrews 11 and say, oh great, Abel, Enoch, and Noah. We want to look beyond their name. And I want to just, a few marks, if you will, this morning. Just a few marks. Why are they there? Why? What is noted? What did God want us to see or study in their life that they were on a list of faithful? So, this is to inspire you. So, here we go. Oh, by the way, this introduction is really long, so that means every person is going to get a really, really short little, just a mention of why they're there. If I were to ask you, what is faith? Anybody want to tackle that? I'm still trying to wrap my head around, what is faith? I made a simple conclusion. And my simple conclusion is, faith is seeing something that you can't see. And the way that I prove it, I translate that into a lifestyle. Okay? I see something that I can't see. I think, if you see it, I don't think it's faith. So faith requires, and that's kind of, I'm getting my clues for that simple explanation from Hebrews 11. It's the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Not quite my language, but it is, I see what I can't see. And I'm serious about it because I'm going to live like I'm seeing something that you and me can't see. That's faith. That's my simple definition of faith. So, creation is mentioned in verse 3. We're in that, by the way, because we believe that the worlds were framed. Number one, Abel. I'm going to name a few that are in here. Abel. Do you know that Abel is dead a long, 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 long time ago? Long time ago, one of the first funerals in human history, right? But he's still talking. He is still talking. That's what it says. And that's about all we know. He's dead, but yet he speaks in verse 4. And all is mentioned that he obtained, he offered a more excellent sacrifice. So a mark of a faithful person includes sacrifice. Now, I acknowledge it's kind of a crime not to do a little bit of a deeper dive into each one of these, but that's for your quiet time. I can hardly think of a better suggestion for a one-hour quiet time sometime in the next week or month of going through the book of Hebrews and just name them one by one and then just park on each one for a while and do a little bit of a deeper dive and even maybe go back and read it. The mark of a faithful, the first mentioned, is a man that had a sacrifice that was more excellent than another man that was bringing a sacrifice. Now I know there's a lot of theories and ideas about what and why. One had blood, the other one didn't, and that's great. But there was something about a heart that was right making a sacrifice. Well, worship. Next one is Enoch. And what do we know about Enoch? Very, very little, other than he didn't die. There's no funeral for Enoch. He was just walking with God, it says. And one day God said, "Okay, let's go to heaven." That's about all we know. Because I guess all I'm going to say is there's a man that just simply walked with God. So I'm getting clues. I'm getting clues of sacrifice and worship. And I'm getting another clue of walking with God. The next one mentioned is Noah. And you know the story about Noah. Remember, what is faith? Faith is seeing something that you and others cannot see. And it's like, this guy builds this big, massive boat in a day where it didn't rain. And he got a lot of mockery and criticism. And what are you doing? Judgment's coming. And God said in Hebrews 11, that's faith. That is faith. Being warned of God. He didn't see it, verse 7. Prepared an ark. Saved himself, saved his household. Oh my, it's a crime not to do a deeper study in Noah. But what am I looking at? What are some things about these men in the, if you're okay with calling it a Hall of Faith chapter? What are some things? So Abel was a man of sacrifice and worship. Enoch simply walked with God. Here we have Noah. He was a right man. He was a righteous man. He was a preacher of righteousness. He saw something. He accepted the warning that wasn't popular at all. Maybe we should be more of a men of warning. Anyway, Noah, I like it. Now we come to probably one of my heroes of faith, and it is Abraham. Did you ever notice that most of them get a verse? Abraham, count his verses. I mean, it's like in my Bible, it is an end. He starts on this column, and we got this entire column, and we're still not done with Abraham. So we don't have time to do a real deep study on Abraham. But one thing that I noted about Abraham. In Hebrews 11, you have, I call it Abraham part A and Abraham part B. Because in Hebrews 11, Abraham goes on and he gets his first little paragraph. And then there's this paragraph in between verses 13 to 16 that aren't really dedicated only to Abraham. It's kind of got, he gets carried off into, these all died in faith, they're strangers, they're pilgrims, they're declaring plainly that they're from another country. In other words, they have a kingdom clarification, and it says they're seeking a heavenly country. Oh, that's right, we're talking about Abraham. And now we're back to Abraham, Abraham part B. So Abraham part A is, he went out not knowing. He had a very comfortable lifestyle there in Mesopotamia. Archaeologists suggest that running water was norm. I don't know how they arrive at these conclusions, but they say that Abraham had an extremely comfortable lifestyle in Mesopotamia. God says, go. Okay, honey, we're leaving. Where are we going? I don't know. Husbands try this sometime. Pack up, we're leaving. Where are we going? I don't know. Oh, sure, honey, anything you say. And they go, up through the Fertile Crescent, and you know the story. It is an incredible picture of a calling. Following a calling of faith. That's Abraham part A. Then he gets carried away with verses 13 to 16. Oh, by the way, coming back to Abraham, Abraham part B, and that is, when he was tried, he offered up Isaac, and you know that story. I mean, the faithful in a test. And if you waited 100 years for a promise, I mean, till you're 100 years old, and you finally got the promise, and God says, okay, now I want you to sacrifice it. That, as a father, actually, next week's Father's Day, right? Yeah. So whoever's preaching Father's Day message, here you go. You want to rip a father heart to shreds? You walk that road to Mount Moriah with Abraham and Isaac, and then you watch little Isaac open up his mouth and say, hey, Daddy, we got everything, but we forgot the sacrifice. That's about all. That's about more than this father heart can handle. He says, yeah, God will provide. And you know the rest of the story. I have so many questions. Actually, Hebrews 11 is where it says that, verse 19, God, accounting that God was able to raise him up. So I believe the only reason Abraham followed through proceeded, he just believed that this is a God of resurrection. This is a God that can raise up my son. So he probably thought, okay, if God says do it, God says I'm going to have seeds as the sand of the seashore. So God's going to be faithful. So I think that's in there for Abraham's rationale, but that's Abraham part B. Anyway, so Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abram. And then we have Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. I'm going to lump them up in just a real... They all get a verse, right? Yeah, there's one verse. We just got done with a man that got about 12 verses. Well, I guess you could say Sarah got a verse or two there in 11. But Abraham got a big entry in this hall of spiritual faith. Isaac, he just is mentioned that he blessed his sons. Concerning the future. What's faith? Something ahead. I don't see it. Jacob, oh my bad man. He's another one that I can hardly talk less about. All it says is that he blessed his sons. He was worshiping. And then it says, leaning on what? The top of his staff. What's the big deal? You know what's the big deal? That's a bigger deal, I think, than what we think. Jacob was a man that depended on himself and his conniving his whole life. At Bethel, Jacob does not impress me at all. I'm sorry, that sounds a little harsh. But you know what he did at Bethel when he saw the ladder? He said, okay, God, if you bless me, if you protect me, if you bring me back safe, if, then I'll. 10%. Okay, that's real genuine. Jacob at Penuel. Read it, Genesis 32. Read it. God smote him, and he could... Jacob was a man that depended on his own schemes all his life And finally, God halted him, and he was limping. And now, and that's mentioned in the Hall of Faith, that he leaned on his staff. That's a big deal to me. So when I read Jacob, I almost conclude he's in there because he was a broken man. Joseph, he's in there because he said, take my bones back. Unpack that for me sometime. But what am I doing? I am trying, more than mentioning their names, and I'm saying, what is mentioned in this passage that put him in there? Or he made mention of his bones, or take my bones back is the way I would say it. Moses, wow, look at him. Here's another man that's got a long list of verses. And simply put, the Moses story is incredible, but I like to simplify it the best that I can. What I see in here is Moses came to a crossroad. I'm going to paraphrase it. You read it in whatever version you wish, and here's what you're going to see. He's going to come to a crossroad, and the one road is marked pleasure, and the other road is marked affliction. And he came to a crossroad. Age of accountability, if you will. Now, if you come to a crossroad, pleasure, affliction, which would you take? You want me to be honest? I'm going pleasure. I'm not choosing affliction. I am not apologetic about admitting that I like pleasure. Now, if I like pleasure more than love, if you love pleasure more than you love God, that's the problem. Every one of us has, in fact, I'm hoping to be beside God one day where the Bible says there are pleasures at his right hand forevermore. I like pleasure. I like leisure. I like things where I'm just not weighed down. And some of us have activities that cause us pleasure. Now, if they get lopsided, that's a problem. So where am I? I'm at the crossroads. Affliction, pleasure. What we have to see is the fine print. The fine print. Pleasure of sin for a season. Oh, that's different. Affliction with the people of God. Oh, fine print makes all the difference. I'm casting my lot with the people of God. I actually think that's the simplified version of why Moses is in the Hall of Faith. Because he made a choice, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than the pleasures of sin for a season. Well, you know the rest of the story. Then it goes into the Red Sea. By the way, if Moses would have said, I kind of like the palace. I kind of like the pleasure. I'm going that way. I have a sneaky suspicion he would have been among the Egyptians that perished in the Red Sea, while God would have raised somebody else up. That's my sneaky suspicion. Then, now we're getting towards the end of the names. There's several more. Jericho is mentioned. Well, of course, you can read Joshua into that. Rahab is mentioned. Gideon, Barak, Samson, David, Samuel. And that's the end of the names. No, Jephthah, I missed that one. And some of those, I actually had to look up the story, why they're even there. I didn't even know the story of some of them. But they had something about them that caused God to say, that's faith. Some of them had incredible failures too, by the way. And then it's a list of miraculous things, like quenching the violence. In weakness, they were strong, they vexed. Wax valiant and fight, raised from the dead. And then verse 36 says, and others. Cruel mockings, scourgings, bonds, imprisonment, stoned, cut in half, tempted. 500 years ago, the Anabaptist story was taking place, and I really, when I read, and others, I just see the Anabaptist story so vividly, and others. No miracles, not waxing valiant in fight, but just sawn asunder, persecuted. They're in the hall of faith. Here you are, here we are this morning, 2026. My encouragement to you is to clarify your kingdom and embrace the questions, do I have faith? Do I have saving faith? Is my faith worth dying for? Will I be found faithful? And I don't know about you, but to me, when I read Hebrews 11, I'm honestly inspired. I really am. Yeah, Cliff Young inspires me too. I read his story sometime. I'd love to hear your comments or feedback on that hero of mine. But the real heroes are Hebrews 11, and get marks from them. And I'm convinced that it's going to convince you that we're not running a sprint. We're in this for the long haul. And what is it? Mile five. I think the Christian life is a lot like mile five. Yes, we look forward to mile six and the finish line and the excitement of the leaving and all of that. But this is for the mile fivers. Maybe you're in a mile five right now. Maybe you can't even talk about your mile five. That's a great possibility. But my encouragement is be faithful. God bless you.